You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Are you a financial advisor considering the independent RIA model and wondering where to start? Start with Schwab Advisor Services. They've helped thousands evaluate the full range of options and can help you determine your best path forward. Start your journey today at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Guys, it's here. Hello. Welcome to Onyx Storm season. Yay! It is finally here. The wait is over. It has arrived. We have read it, as hopefully have all of you, and we literally are just giddy to dive into this. It is the gym of our lives.
Yeah.
The bell of the ball. All of the things. We can't wait. Okay. Kim, also, shout out some patrons for us. Other bells of the ball, please.
Other bells of the ball. I would love to do that. So as you guys know, one of the tier two benefits from our Patreon is that you get a special shout out in one of our episodes. So in this episode, we are going to be shouting out Christina Velasquez, Tanya S., Brooke Davis, Raisa O., and Jess Spencer.
Woo!
Hi. Hi. Thank you guys so, so much for supporting us. You are the reason that we are able to continue to do these episodes. Truly, and we are just so, so thankful for all of you.
We are.
Beyond thankful. We love you so much. Thank you.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, guys. All right. So
let's do this.
Let's dive in. I'm going to give a little spoiler warning. So listeners, we actually have our initial reactions to finishing the book up already on a main feed. And if you want to see the video of us, we recorded it in a super cute podcast studio in New York City the day after we finished.
Yeah.
And that's up on our Patreon for tier two. So if you want to hear like what we thought just after finishing, our like gut reactions, all of our like kind of crazy, quick, unhinged, you know, theories that we were thinking at the end, go listen to that and come back here because this is the start of our deep dive.
Yes.
Okay. So we will be breaking these episodes into three parts because there is just too much to discuss to keep it to one or two episodes. Our final episode will actually be dedicated solely to the ending of the book. Okay. We will be breaking it down and dissecting everything that happened and sharing all of our thoughts into like what we think might be coming in book four.
Yep.
So these episodes are not necessarily going to be in chronological order. There will be some of that, but we've broken it up into like, you know, characters, deep dives. We're basically going into this with the knowledge of the entirety of the book. So please keep that in mind.
Yes.
So without further ado, this is your official spoiler warning for all things Empyrean and Onyx Storm by Rebecca Yarros. Yes. Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's all right. Go. So book three picks up like immediately after the events of Iron Flame. Okay. Yes. Sawyer's in the infirmary. Poor Sawyer. Oh, what a journey. He's recovering. Violet is compartmentalizing her mother's death, and Zayden is Venon. Currently, only Imogen, Bodhi, Garrick, Quinn, and Violet know about Zayden's Venonism. I love that. Venonism.
Venonism.
I love Venonism.
La, la, la. So basically, just the Rebellion relic holders and our marked ones. Well, the inner circle marked ones, I should say.
Correct.
And that's where we pick up.
Yeah.
And we dive right into the prologue. And guys, Rebecca gave us answers on page two.
Yeah, she did.
She did not mess around with these answers, guys.
I love it.
They were from the prologue all the way through. She was just drizzling them in there. It was amazing.
She's like, we're just going to answer some questions right off the bat. And I was like, please, please do, because we have been spiraling.
It was amazing.
So the biggest one that she said was about Andarna's fire. And we, all of us, were correct in this thinking that Andarna's fire, the fact that she burned that venom at the end of Iron Flame, means that she is different. I mean, obviously she is. She's a seventh breed. But like, her fire is special.
Yeah, it is.
The smoking head. The smoking head. The head was smoking.
smoking head.
We knew it had to be something, and it was. Love it.
So the quote that Andarna says, she says, "If I somehow altered that venom inadvertently while changing my scales, then the rest of my kind should know how to master the tactic, how to change him, cure him," the him being Zayden, of course.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And I think that's really key to note here, that she makes a point to say that she altered the venom inadvertently while changing her scales. She says the term
Ooh.
Altered.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't say, yeah.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that. Altered.
Which I think is interesting.
Yeah. Altered as in like altered him back to human. That's why I could kill him.
Ooh.
Maybe.
Yes.
And therefore I can alter you back to human to cure you, mm-hmm. theoretically.
I want us to pin this for Kim when you go later in your section, mm-hmm. because this is very interesting. This terminology.
Mm. Yes, yes.
So altered the venom inadvertently while changing her scales. And I think that's also the big important thing, okay, is the changing of the scales.
Yes.
It's definitely important.
Okay, so we knew this. She's super special. Basically, what they come to the conclusion of is that they need to go and search for the rest of her family, okay? We've mm-hmm. got to find a cure for Zayden. And this kind of becomes their mantra, or Violet and Andarna's mantra for majority of the book is, like, leave no stone unturned. Mm-hmm. We are going to find a cure. There's no other way to go about this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that is basically what their driving force is the entire book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Christina, will you take us through some highlights from the beginning?
I would love nothing more. All right, so let's break down some highlights from these first few chapters. Everyone, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so there's a lot that happens in this first 5 to 6 chapters when you're reading it. Mm-hmm. And then when you finish, you kind of like zoom out and look at them from the scope of the whole book. And there is actually not that much that happens here.
Yeah.
But it's actually mainly her setting up plot points that are going to come later in the book. So she's really giving us a lot of groundwork here.
Yeah.
So we're going to quickly summarize some key things from that groundwork. So, okay, basically, Navarre and Poramiel are in negotiations, okay? We're mm-hmm. trying to figure out a peace treaty. It's not going well, but that peace treaty would provide safe haven for Poramiel's people and specifically the flyers at Beskayev. Mm-hmm. However, tensions are high, folks. Nobody likes each other. And if yeah. we remember, the wards at Beskayev were successfully erected at the end of Iron Flame, but with a major caveat, mm-hmm. being that the wards do protect from venom, but they do not allow for flyers to channel from their griffins.
Yeah.
A little unfair. We'll get there. So
yeah.
that also, speaking of unfair, is a major non-negotiable for Takaris and Queen Mariah of Poramiel. And yeah, which is basic values
yeah.
here. Like they want their people to be able to channel magic. It yes. makes total sense.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, not to the Navarians. So, unfortunately, Navarre, having been at war with Poramiel for years, therefore, there's a lot of distrust. There's a lot of things built up there. Enter our magical frisbee. Okay, so,
y'all,
friends, we will be referring to the tempered ruined disc as the magical frisbee because
it is.
Yes.
In our mind, that is what it is. Okay.
Exactly.
So they are one and the same.
Yes.
And turns out that whole journey and lesson learned there with the magical frisbee was just to showcase to us that runes can be altered after tempering.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the lesson. That's the takeaway.
There we go.
That's it.
How long did that take?
Could have summed it up, but why would we do that?
I spend an embarrassing amount of time rereading that same paragraph over and over again going, what did I miss?
Yep.
There is something very important
here. Something's
nope.
levitating. No. Nope.
Twas an nope. example.
Didn't matter.
Twas an
That's
example.
That's all it was. That's all it was.
So, cut to Violet and co doing exact example, right? We have a super yes. secret mission.
Yep.
We go to alter the wards to allow the Griffin flyers to be able to channel and use their magic. And the Navarian leadership is none too pleased. It's safe to say. They are about yeah. to execute her for treason, actually. So, they pull her out of class. Casual Tuesday for Violet.
Casual.
So, they bring her in and, you know, but luckily,
oh.
a royal official pardon was signed the night before. Clearing all those who defected to Erasia and Iron Flame. Hello.
Oh my God.
I was like, well, that's convenient.
Perfect timing.
I love when that happens.
It was mighty heavenly fire of Rebecca.
It is.
But, you know, it gave us this moment that will live rent-free in my brain of the rest of the scenario. I'm just glaring at her and Zayden being there, sitting there smirking and in his head
yeah.
looking at her. And if he's silent to everyone else and in his head, he just goes, brilliant, reckless woman. Oh, God.
Love
save
it.
Me.
Love it.
So, yes, speaking of the Sidarium is made up of the rulers of each province in Navarre.
Yes.
They have been elected to such position. Speaking of elected, they have also officially elected our boy Zaddy to be the Duke of Tirindor.
Yeah, they have.
Wow. Very incredibly important plot-wise, and also really giving us some sexy historical vibes while we're at it.
I know.
Yes, a sexy duke. We'd love to
I
see
love it.
Duke and Duchess. Okay, yes, Anna.
Okay, so I do have a little hot take here, and I think we chatted about this a little bit privately. Why is nobody on the Sidarium questioning the fact that Venon are here?
Mm-mm.
It was supposed to be some big top secret, right? And nobody knew.
Yeah.
And the only way to keep a secret is to not tell people.
Or kill them.
Yeah, or kill them, as Daddy Aetos tries to do and Varys tried to do in book two.
Right.
But like, literally, they're all so mad at Violet
for
like leaving because of the Venon. It's like misdirected anger.
Yeah.
It's like, why are we so mad at Violet and all these people that quote unquote defected to Aerysia, when in reality, it's your own freaking government that was like, Venon, what? It's a child's fairy tale. They're not real.
Not real.
You're crazy.
Like, what?
In my head, when I first read this, I was like, oh, they all just must have known. But no.
No.
They couldn't have all known.
Not all of them. I mean, some of them.
I just don't see how you keep it a secret if everybody knows.
Well, like the people from outside the wards knew because they were battling them.
Sure.
But
sure.
The people in Navarre, like those people, we didn't just tell random Joe Schmo Duke.
No.
Like, he didn't need to know. He wasn't on the intel list.
I don't think the Duchess of Moraine was aware.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering, though, if maybe everybody on the Sidarium knew.
Mm.
And then everybody else
is,
like, they're not being brought into the storyline for some reason. Like,
they're not privy.
Shush, shush, shush. Go sit down.
They're having, like, private conversations within themselves. Like, hey, guys, what the fuck? Like, they said Venon weren't real.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, is it just, like, so is it like every time a new duke or duchess comes to power, they're like, so BT dubs.
Yes.
Here's the fables of the Baron. It's all true.
Yeah. This is actually a textbook. This is not a storybook for children. This is actually real.
And you are sworn to secrecy.
Exactly. The thing that I found also confusing about this is nobody is like, what? A seventh breed of dragon? What? And Darnus, this crazy, where are they? Like all these things.
What?
It's just like, nope. For considering how much of a big time deal secret at the end of Iron Flame, when Darnus is like, I can only tell you, and it's a big secret, and I'm the only one that exists, and no one knows. And then everyone's like, so we're all in agreement. We got to go find the seventh breed of dragon den. And that's the whole plan. Like, nobody was like shocked by this.
Nope.
So a seventh breed, you say? Fascinating.
Everyone was like, well, we've known about them. We've just been waiting, killing our time till we needed to go get them.
Right.
What is happening?
I'm assuming, I guess, that happened in the break of that 2 weeks from the prologue.
Yeah.
Until first page, we get 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So I guess those happened off page, but would have liked to see some pushback.
Just a little, just a sentence.
Yeah, I agree that it was weird where the anger was being directed at, and it felt like an incomplete circle of just a storyline of people being like, okay, but wait, hey, though, just like while I have you here, you have lied to us, though, for centuries. Like, I just want to be clear. That is true. Okay.
Got it.
No, that's all I need. I'm going to go to class. I just wanted to clear that up. Like, no one is like,
exactly.
Everyone's like, Violet, you garbage trash, you deserted. But no one's ever like, well, but like, actually, though, no, now the Venon are real. So, like,
can we circle back to the Venon issue at hand? And everyone's like, nope, we're just mad at the deserters. It's like, nope, okay.
It felt like it was like, well, I mean, clearly everyone's whole sole focus is being mad at Violet and Zayden, because everyone else's lives also revolve on Violet and Zayden.
Yeah.
As they do ours.
No, true.
You know, it did feel a little like Aetos can be mad and hate her, but does everyone need to be out to get her? Like, okay.
Right.
I get it. Like, Aetos is just our big bad, but like,
totally.
Duchess of Badabada would not give a shit about Violet deserting.
No, and they should not. But speaking of Zayden and Violet, can we discuss our Duke and Duchess?
That phrase, a Duke and Duchess.
The Duke and Duchess of Tirindor. Let's discuss them because they were such a joy to read in this book. And I just feel like, look at the growth that we have had from Iron Flame.
Leaps and bounds.
So much.
There is so much communication happening. We are not keeping secrets. We are not bickering with each other. We're not being like, you didn't ask the right question. Well, I didn't know the right question to ask. Well, that's not my fault. I have to keep secrets. It's like, just tell me. There was none of that.
You mean the Riddick play-by-play?
Exactly.
Exactly.
And I feel he summed that up pretty well, to be, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Perfectly.
Were any lies told? No.
No.
No, they were not. Now, I want to ask you guys this, and I'm curious for your perspective on it, because looking back now, I feel very strongly that I think it was very purposeful on Rebecca's part to make Iron Flame so full of angst so that she could show growth on Violet and Zayden's part in Onyx Storm.
Yeah.
Because I truly don't think we would have appreciated their relationship in this book so much if Iron Flame was not written the way it was. How do you guys feel about that?
I 100% agree. I think it was necessary. It walked so we could run romantically.
Yes.
I think it was necessary in their broader journey. Mm. If we look at it later as a 5-book journey, it'll seem like an important piece of time in their relationship. Mm-hmm. Reading it, not knowing that was coming, was the frustrating part.
Sure.
But she had to do it.
I think we got a lot of the BS out of the way. Mm-hmm. And this book solidified how strong their foundation is now mm-hmm. as like a couple. Mm-hmm. And I think that's clearly because of the ending of this book is going to be very important and pivotal in like what's to come in the book 4 if they're separated.
I agree. And I just feel like it was really nice to have them be such a stable mm-hmm. foundation for us as the reader. And it made us feel very comfortable and relaxed in their relationship. There was never mm-hmm. any stress or worry, at least on my end, like, oh my God, are they going to break up? So let's highlight a couple examples of some of our favorite moments of Zayden and Violet's relationship in this mm-hmm. book. So mm-hmm. when Zayden sees his mom in the Isle Kingdoms, mm-hmm. this was so sad and so upsetting on his behalf. And I think this would have been a moment historically where we would have seen him really pull away from Violet, and Violet would have been very unsure about how to approach him and support him. Mm-hmm. But he really leaned on her. He was so vulnerable with her and she listened, and then she yes. went to bat for him.
I love
that. It
was that.
So good. Such growth.
And I was so proud of Violet too for like walking right up to him and being like, okay, I'm going to sit on the floor with you and we're going to talk about this.
Yes.
Agreed.
She like got behind the chair and like, he's sitting, oh, it's just so sad. It's like a little boy who hides in the corner.
Yeah.
You know, when they're like scared.
Yeah.
And she just goes and sits next to him and she's like, you're not going to be alone.
Yeah.
You're not going to do this whole thing where like you push me away and you're sitting with your feelings.
Exactly.
Angst, not happening.
No Duke of Angst today.
I'm here for you. We don't have to talk, but I'm here.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
And that's what he needed. It's what he yes. needed in that moment. And I think him not pushing her away was really important. This is a big step for them because he mm-hmm. talks about like, I would love to not feel this. And she's like, don't shut me out. And he says, mm-hmm. never. And then he keeps talking. Yeah. So that was a huge, huge moment for them.
Yes.
And again, I think this is such a great example of their growth as a couple, their communication with each other, their confidence in each other. Violet is so much more confident in how she approaches him and how she communicates with him. Iron Flame was so just like, eh, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to push, like when to push or when to not. And now she's like so comfortable with him,
right?
So confident with him that she's like, no,
yeah,
we're gonna figure this out, and I'm gonna have your back, and I'm gonna go to bat for you and stand up for you. And I'm love to see it.
Agreed. I love to see it.
So speaking of Violet, she was so incredible in this book, showing him such support and patience with Zayden, obviously like struggling a little bit with, you know, the whole being Venom thing.
Fine.
Yeah. You know, no big deal.
No big deal. He hates himself so much throughout this entire book. And he tries to tell her like, you should hate me too. Like you shouldn't trust me. You should stay away from me. And she literally was like, all right, cut that shit out. Like we're not doing that.
We're done. Yeah.
We're not doing that.
We're done with that. Like, he doesn't trust himself. He doesn't think Violet should trust him. But Violet never, ever lets him feel that he is unworthy of not only her love, but the love and respect of his friends that know.
Yes.
100%. I thought that was really important for everyone's journey in the book. The reader, too, to not have to worry about that, you know?
And totally.
Yeah, I just think it was written well that, like, it makes sense that he would feel these feelings. Like, we had to put some of it in.
Sure.
It just clocked with his character.
We did.
But I think it was enough where it was made sense, but it wasn't annoying. It wasn't like Edward Cullen. We were all very scared about that.
Oh my
it wasn't
God.
That.
I've seen so many people talk about comparing it to Edward Cullen and like in the sex scenes where he's like, I can't trust myself. I'm dangerous.
Yeah.
and like Bella's like, I trust you. You won't hurt me. And then it's like sitting like literally Violet. It's like, girl, you have a death wish. But it's also so hot. Like, keep
so
going.
Hot.
Like, but so
please.
Hot. We love to read it.
We love it.
We do.
Yeah, I just overall really, really loved that there was no miscommunication. Mm-hmm. And like we've talked about, it really just made us feel so grounded in their relationship. And then we were really able to kind of focus on everything else going on in the book because we weren't so worried about like, oh my God, are they going to have another argument and break up again? It's like, nope, they're together. They're in game.
Yes, I loved it.
I think that we made Violet such a central part of his tether to like his humanity and his control is, I think, going to be a big part coming in book 4 because she is what stops him right in the end. It's her love that makes him pull back so that he still has that little aspect of himself, or that's the way I read it. But also it reminds me of that, I don't know if it's an epigraph or if it's somebody talking about something that happened, but the Venoms like wipe out a whole town, but there was this one Venon and she leaves one house standing and everybody in that home.
Oh.
And it's from the male's point of view, the only surviving adult, which means that the other two had to have been children.
Yeah.
And he says, she is just as beautiful with her dark black hair as the day I married her or met her. I can't remember if it says married or met.
Wait, what? I totally forgot about this.
I have a vague memory of this, but.
So it's recounting a town being wiped out.
Yeah.
And there's only one home that was left unscathed, which to me meant that that Venon was emotionally tied to that family.
Yes.
Right? It sounded like a husband and a wife and their two kids. And she turned. And she, the whole town gets wiped out, but she doesn't touch that home.
That's interesting.
Like there's something about her that stopped her. The love.
There's a hope. There's a
hope.
Yeah.
There is hope. I love that. And that's so interesting. So let's end like some of our favorite moments with this sweet quote from Zayden to Violet. And he says, a kiss isn't enough. It never is with us. His fingers find the bottom of my coronet braid and he tugs, tilting my face toward him. You want me the same way that I want you. Wholly, completely, with nothing but skin between us. Heart, mind, and body. All I want is to lose myself in you and I can't. Aww. You are the only person in the world with the power to strip me of every ounce of my control and the only person I can't fathom losing that control with. And yet here I am, unable to keep 3 fucking feet away from you.
I want to cry. Oh!
It's so good. It's so good. And that's a perfect example of the juxtaposition of where he is mentally.
Yes.
And it makes sense. But then he just can't. He can't.
Can't do stay it. Away.
Yeah. I can't quit you.
That's right. And we love it.
It's so good. Oh, my God. All right. Anna, talk us through another interesting character in this book.
Yes. Okay. So I want to chat about Theophany, which I finally said correctly.
It.
Okay. Theophany, a.k.a. Silver-Haired Girlie, a.k.a. Mia Thermopolis. Whatever you want to call her.
Yeah, a woman of many names.
She's got a lot of names. That's right.
Okay, so we have Theophany. This is the first, I think, big pivotal point in the book, and it's around chapter 10 and chapter 11. And Violet and her squad are sent to Samara by Daddy Atos as punishment for altering the Wardstone. We end up going from Samara to Newhall to try and save Marin's family, because this is when Violet does her dream walking.
Mm-hmm. And now looking back, it's very hard. Obvious.
Very obvious.
Very clear. They all agree they're going to go to Newhall. They're going to save Marin's family from the Venon.
Mm-hmm.
And who is it?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
But silver-haired girly, Theophany, okay?
Yep.
So,
hey girl.
Obviously, this is not the first time we've seen her character, right? She was mm-hmm. earlier in the book, which was the excerpt that was released to Cosmo magazine back in November. We have mm-hmm. a whole little mini episode on that. Wherever you stream podcasts, you can go listen to it. So we kind of skipped over that for this episode.
The way we all spiraled in the wrong directions.
Yeah, the way we all spiraled. And we were wrong.
We were completely wrong.
Okay, but I do want to break down some things that we learn about her character and some of the reveals that we get, okay? And mm-hmm. obviously she's dead and gone at the end of this book.
Well.
Desiccated is the word they keep using.
Okay.
That's an interesting word.
But desiccate to me means like incinerated.
Yeah.
So desiccated is having had all moisture removed, dried out, lacking vitality. To remove the moisture from something caused to become completely dry.
Like a husk.
Yeah.
Yes, like a husk.
Wow.
Like the withered, desiccated landscape.
That makes sense. The way that they drain the life from the land, when their wyverns die, they desiccate. Yeah. They probably like shrivel up.
Exactly.
That's how I think of it. Like a mummy.
Like a mummy.
Yeah, almost like a husk. Like a husk of something. Like, you know, a snake. I almost feel like it's like a snake skin.
Yeah.
Science lessons.
With Kim.
Don't like it.
Kim.
My favorite.
Okay, so I mean, this is the first time I feel like she's dead. I said it. I actually don't need to see a body.
It's on record.
I know. I just feel like we keep getting these interesting characters and then they die. And I'm like, you had answers. So
why did nobody
agreed. That's a frustrating piece.
Why did nobody ask her?
Well, like the whole Lilith Journals thing, we thought we were going to get so much from Lilith Journals and we really didn't get that much. And like, she's dead now, so.
Can't ask her.
And I don't think Theophany was keeping journals. So like.
I don't think so.
I don't know, maybe, but like.
Yeah. And like, there are things that we need to know.
Yes.
What happened? How did she go from priestess to this?
Which is why I like want to spend time talking about it, because I think she, I think she's dead. I mean, I don't know how we come back from desiccation.
No, you're right. I mean, that's
But fine. I also am like, I feel like she's going to be important.
Could there be something because she was a high priestess? Is there still some little like piece of her that Dune can like?
I don't know. Fucking Dune's the one that killed her.
Yeah, I know. But still, I don't know.
The goddess was like, yeah, no, bitch. I'm killing you with my marble from my temple.
You're right.
So
you're
I think we can all agree that we think she was a priestess of Dune.
Yeah, that's confirmed.
Yes.
Because she had the yeah.
So she was so she was a priestess of Dune.
And I think she was fully dedicated.
Yeah. Right.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yes.
That's why she has all silver hair.
Right.
Yes, that's
right. Silver hair girly from Cosmo.
So I do want to talk about this. There's a few things I want to chat about with Theophany.
Okay.
She doesn't seem to like Berwyn. Mm-hmm. She says this when Violet is like bringing up Berwyn and like, do you answer to him? And she said, as if I would answer to that fool. And there's like more than one time where Berwyn is brought up and it seems like the two of them are competing. Berwyn wants Violet and Theophany wants Violet. And she's like, I will be a better sage to you. Come work for me. Come work under me. I will treat you better than Berwyn will.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's going on between the two of them because I can't tell if it's like a healthy dose of venom competition.
Yeah.
Or if there's like more to it. Like, is there, I just feel like Theophany, there was more to what she wanted than what Berwyn wanted. Their goals did not align, I think.
Yeah. There's still so much about this whole motivation that there's a piece missing.
A whole piece missing.
Yeah.
I mean, she talks about Andarna in chapter 10. Or chapter 11, and she says, you truly don't know what she is, do you? What a prize you've won.
Yeah.
And it's throughout the book, anytime Andarna is in front of Theophany, she's looking at her reverently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that term is used, reverent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, I almost don't think that Theophany wants Violet so much as she wants Andarna.
Andarna.
And the way to get Andarna is to
Violet.
Get Violet.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think that might be it.
Which was really interesting when we saw that switch kind of happen. Like when we figured it out, we were like, oh, she doesn't want Violet, which we've thought this entire time. She wants Andarna.
Yeah.
And like, why?
Goes back, I think, to what we think might be going on with Andarna and the Seventh Breed.
Agreed. But I think there's also some piece of Violet that's special. Like there's still the thing where the sage told her at the battle at Resen, like you command the sky. Like all that stuff is still true.
Yes.
All these other Vinnin were like, we need her, not the silver haired one. We need her. Like, I mean, maybe that's we need her because of her dragon. But I think there's a piece there that I feel like I'm missing.
Agreed.
Of the Vinnin motivation and why then Berwyn wants her. Okay, but then why did we need Zayden? We needed Zayden to turn for her, but then like we need, it's like the two of them somehow. There's another piece there.
I know.
I agree, Christina. I agree.
Yeah.
Do you think that magic balance, right?
Yeah.
Is there a precog on their side?
Oh.
Okay.
Is there somebody who's like, yo, this is how we have to make this happen. We got to go through all the back channels. We got to get Zayden, then we got to get Violet. That's how we get Andarna. You know, like we have to lay the groundwork in that way. I don't know.
Yeah.
So far, we're seeing shadows and shadows. We're seeing Stormwielder.
Yeah.
I'll get to the Dreamwalker thing later, but I think Dreamwalker.
Yep.
I wonder if there's something like that.
That's interesting.
I could see that.
Imagine, guys, the end of like book four, and it's like Violet becomes Vinnin, and then some precog's like, see, I told you all the pieces. I'm a mastermind.
Yeah.
Did I tell you I'm a mastermind?
I told you I'm a mastermind. I
love it.
We know she loves Taylor.
Exactly.
We do. True. So like we said, we find out, you know, at first we think she's a lightning wielder, but turns out she's a storm wielder. She's the answer to Lilith's power, not Violet's.
So interesting.
Sorry, I had to have a quick question.
Yeah.
When they say answer, they mean the balance, right? That's like what's, they're interchangeable. Okay, got it.
Yeah, sorry. Yes. Got it.
So they're matching, so they're not a counterbalance to each other.
Yeah.
What does that mean? So like they match, but they're not like opposing signets where it's like,
no, they're not opposing. So they're,
you know, like one can start storms. One could stop storms. Like they're the, they're the same.
It's okay, control storms. Yeah. Got just it. I think in general,
it's like same signet. One's good. One's bad.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, maybe there is a Vinnin precog.
Could be.
Do we think, we don't think Melgren is a Vinnin.
No.
I think he might be.
Oh, really?
Melgren? Yeah.
I don't think we've never seen the dude, right? Oh, no, we have in book two.
A theory from Trisha, shout out to Trisha, is that maybe Melgren did turn, so then we needed another, he kind of had precog, like different kind of precog. So if he turned, then we needed another precog to appear, and that's when
Auric
got his signet. Because it manifested so late.
It did.
It did.
He was a late bloomer.
Like maybe it manifested whenever it, like, okay, this is the balance. Melgren's gone now.
Okay, so the Andarno, you truly don't know what she is, do you? What a price you've won. I think there is something really special about Andarno. It goes back to her scales and the fire, and I think we're going to learn a lot more about her in book four, I hope. So this other thing I thought was interesting that Theophany says. She says, sometimes I forget just how short a mortal memory can be, insinuating that she's like very old. And she, you know, she references like the word immortal comes up. And
totally.
I just find it really interesting that her power, okay, to be fair, she's not a lightning wielder, which a lightning wielder, I guess, hasn't been seen in centuries since the Great War, but
yeah.
Interesting.
Yes, very interesting. But is a storm wielder also super interesting? Because
I think so.
There were so many things that my crackpot theory was that she was one of the first six.
One of the first six. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had talked about that in our chapter.
Yeah, because theophany means, literally it means God's appearance or divine manifestation. So then I went and looked up Lyra because we only have two names for the first six and only one of them is a woman. Mm-hmm. And Lyra Michel of Moraine, Michel literally means who is like God. So theophany, God's appearance, divine manifestation, Michel, like, you know, who is like God.
Totally.
And then this line from Violet, she looks at theophany and she says, dismissive gesture that reminds me of the Duchess of Moraine. I know this is like so stretching it, but Lyra Michel is of, she's from Moraine. It's Lyra Michel of Moraine.
Fascinating.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting.
I like that. Yeah.
She put that in there on purpose. Like, she put that line in there on purpose. 100%. Like, that's such a random name to throw around.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, really? It reminds you of the Duchess of Moraine who you...
Not like Kat with her, like, nobility or...
Yeah.
No, it's the Duchess of Moraine.
I think you're onto something here.
Agreed.
And we don't know. We don't know what happens to Vinon. Berwyn probably wasn't his original name. Maybe when you become Vinon, it's like when you become a pope and you get a new name.
You get a new name.
You like, get a new name. And her name is Theophany because she's like, I was for doom.
Did you watch Conclave last night?
I did.
It's a great movie, listeners.
But you know what I mean? Like, she was like, oh, trying to think of her a new name. And she was like, oh, I was the High Priestess for Dune. So that makes sense. I think you might have something here. Maybe she is Lyra. Maybe in some of Lyra's journals at some point, we're going to see her become a High Priestess for Dune. And we're like, what? Like, you know, I don't know.
I think it makes sense to change your name when you become Vinon, especially if she was like this priestess, like this holy priestess who had devoted her life to a god. It would make sense that she... Okay, hold on, hold on. Okay, in her mind,
tell us,
Vinon like think that they are gods, basically. Like, they think that they are these all powerful, especially the Mavens are like incredibly powerful.
Yes.
And it would make, she makes a comment like talking about being a priestess and talking about that and then moving over to being a Vinon, and like she lost that.
She says, why would I be a product of like the priestess when I could become a god?
Exactly.
Something like that.
Exactly.
I'm paraphrasing.
So she says that. And so in my mind, if she's like, well, I'm basically a god now, so I'm going to change my name. I'm no longer Lyra. I'm Theophany, because when people are in my presence, they are in the presence of a god.
Oh my God. That's it.
Interesting.
And it would also be like a fuck you to Dune.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be like, ha ha.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love it.
There is this also crazy theory. So we have all the Isles, right? They're all named after all the gods and goddesses, right?
Right.
And then Amaryllis is actually Navarre. Well, there's no Malik. But what if the Barons are Malik?
Oh, that makes sense.
Oh.
They're death.
Yeah.
It's death. There's like a river of Malik or some sort of bay of Malik that's new to the map this time.
Oh. Is it now?
And it separates the Barons from poor Emile.
Wow.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's interesting.
Like, what if she forsook the priestess Dune and then was like, I'm going to be with Malik?
Oh, that's interesting.
That's interesting.
Like, dedicated her, or I don't know if you dedicate, you don't really dedicate yourself to Malik that we
like,
know.
Like, kind of like, yeah.
It'd be interesting.
That's so interesting.
I mean, I think there's some potential there for sure. But I like the idea that, yeah, when you're a Vinon, you change your name, and maybe she's Lyra.
She's a pope.
That's what, we're sticking to it. Let's talk about the segments. Okay, guys. All right. I'm going to read you an epigraph, and then I'm going to read you a quote, and then we're going to talk about them, okay?
Yes.
Got it.
So this is an epigraph from chapter two. The rarest of signets, those that rise once in a generation or century, have manifested concurrently with an equal twice in our records, both critical times in our history, but only once have the six most powerful walked the continent simultaneously. As fascinating as that spectacle must have been, I would rather not live to see it happen again. A study on signets by Major Dalton Cisneros. Okay, but before we unpack that little tidbit, I do want to couple it with this quote. Okay.
Go for it.
From Professor Emeterio, saying, the last time a shadow and lightning wielder fought side by side, they managed to drive the Vinon back into the Barrens for a few hundred years. We'll figure out how to do it again. Okay.
So interesting.
This is fascinating. So interesting.
It's so fucking fascinating. And it feels like such foreshadowing. And I really feel like before this book, I would have read this and be like, but I don't know if Rebecca's like at this level of giving us this foreshadowing Easter eggs. And now I think she is.
Oh, yeah.
I really think that this is what we're doing.
Yep.
And I am fascinated by it. I cannot get out of my head the number six and like what that means and like the amount of times we're using six.
So many times.
Oh my God. It has to be important. Like, I don't understand how we're going to do it, but it's so important.
So the rarest of signets, which we've started to talk about, like, you know, like it goes back to that quote that Emma Terrio says that the last time a shadow and lightning wielder fought side by side was during the Great War.
Yeah.
So if, to me, and I could be wrong, but I'm reading that as two of the original six had shadows and lightning. So then what were the other four, right?
Right.
Could it be precognition? Could it be Arik? Could it be Garrick as a distance walker?
We know we haven't seen that in years.
We haven't seen that in years. I'm just so curious to see.
Is it fact? Is it canon? Is that what we're saying? That the original six are the six most powerful. They are the same people, right? That's the same thing. That the original six had the six most powerful signets, right?
I mean, that's my understanding if you put these two quotes together.
Right.
I mean, but only once have the six most powerful walk the continent simultaneously. I don't know what other six we refer to.
Yeah.
And then the fact that Emma Terrio says, like, since the Great War, which would have been the original six, I just feel like that has to go together.
Well, we talked about this as well in Iron Flame with the ward stuff, right? Because it's like, we need the six most powerful signets together. And they had to make that decision. Who's the six most powerful that are here? And like, then their dragons did the things, right?
Right.
But so then it's already in our head at some point, there's a deciding factor. These are the most powerful six.
Yeah.
So those have to be the first six. Also, there's six breeds of dragon. It's just, it's, yeah, it's a lot.
So there's also, there were six pillars. I don't know why this drove me. I like something. Okay, there's six pillars at the Temple of Dune in Umbriel. And there's six little icons. Icons. There's six icons.
I love that.
That are engraved into them. And they each represent things that are important in war. Do you have them in front of you, Kim? There's like a fire book.
Oh, maybe those are the signets.
The original six signets.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Okay, so the icons. So it's a sword, shield, fire, water, claw, and a book. Okay. So book, could that be like precog? I don't know. Seeing what's to come.
This is fascinating.
Water, ice, Riddick.
Oh, yes. Because he can do the fancy thing with the water.
He can do the fancy thing with the ice. And then fire. I don't know.
We'll get a fire wielder at some point. Something with fire.
Yeah. Shield. Mira is a shield. That's obvious, though.
Uh-huh.
Claw?
Yeah, claw's tricky.
I don't know.
So the theory of the six is kind of matching riders with the gods.
Mm.
Yes.
And basically saying, you know, obviously we've talked about six gods, six first riders, six Navarian dragon den, six missing eggs.
Sure.
Rebecca did confirm at our book talk in New York that the gods are going to play a much bigger role in books 4 and 5.
Uh-huh.
Christina just read that really interesting quote. Violet would be Dune. They said Zayden for the goddess of love. I don't know how to pronounce it. Like Loyal? Or...
I actually have a whole thought on that.
Because he turned for love.
Ooh.
Riddick would be Zinal, god of luck. Brennan, Malak, god of death, because he was basically brought back almost from the dead.
Love.
Rhiannon is Amari, queen of the gods. And
I love that.
Did you read the same thing I read about...
Yes. Yes,
Rhiannon?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So Rhiannon would be Amari, queen of the gods, and then Arik would be Hedion, god of wisdom, because his father is King Tari the Wise.
Yes. So wait, who is Violet? I missed it.
Violet is Dune, god of war.
Oh, I love that.
Because she's touched.
She's touched by Dune.
Okay, Riddick, he says in Onyxstorm that he prefers Zinal, and it seems like Zinal favors him too. He gets very lucky, and he has a brown dragon. Okay, Brennan, his chosen name is... I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm sorry. It's
Ansere,
which is translated to resurrection.
Yes.
He's come back from the dead. Okay. So Rhiannon, the first time that we meet Rhiannon, Violet thinks that she looks like Amari.
Oh my God.
Okay. And Rhiannon, the name Rhiannon translates to queen of the gods. And it's noted that she looks like Amari, who is the queen of the gods. And her name means queen of the gods, if you translate it.
This has to be something.
I love it.
I've read theories where people are like, she is somehow Amari. She's somehow, I don't know if it's that.
Right.
But I think she is somehow, this makes sense to me. I like this.
Right?
She is going to be connected to,
to
Amari. And that also makes sense. She's leading stuff. She's like the squad leader. She's
she
in
is.
Charge.
Exactly.
She's such a
she
good
is
leader.
Queenly. Like, oh my God, I love this.
Oh, I love that.
Sorry, this was not a theories episode, but like I just read this. And when we were talking about, there's so many hints in this book that like the first six, mm-hmm. and then all of these writers, their signets are manifesting and they're becoming so much stronger, and it's giving like there's going to be another six.
Yes.
It really is. It's giving like we're building our Avengers team. It's all happening. Everyone's getting their things at the same time. And I think it's going to keep unraveling as we go, that we're going to keep getting hints to like, who is this? Who's going to be important? Like stuff like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Okay.
Totally. I completely agree.
I'm so here for this.
Okay. So speaking of signets, we got to talk about second signets. Wow. Specifically how they relate to our marked ones. Okay. This was one of the first big fan service reveals of the book. Yes. There were quite a few, but this was one of the first big ones, because just everything surrounding second signets has been such a huge conversation and discussion in the fandom. There's just so many questions around them, so many theories, and she just flat out answered them definitively in a casual conversation.
Yeah.
She just very much was like, well, let's get this sorted out, friends. This is the deal. So starting with Garrick and Liam, let's just like touch on them first. So Zayden confirms for us officially that second signets can often accompany the rebellion relic, something we've theorized. Now it's canon.
Yep.
It's, quote, often enough to be sure that Kaori can't possibly have accurate records, but not too completely that anyone questions why I only present with one.
Yes.
Very helpful. Little heavenly fire, but I'll take it.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. We also get confirmation, again, quickly and casually, of both of Garrick's signets. Okay?
Yep.
Because a reminder, everyone, we still didn't know the first one until this reveal where we got both of them kind of simultaneously.
Which, yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. But turns out he has and was a wind wielder. Okay. That apparently has already been happening. We didn't know.
Yes, apparently.
But now, he is our distance walker.
Yeah,
he is. Hasn't been seen in centuries, and which we also called after that interview with the desert island.
Yes.
10 points for Hufflepuff. I'm the only Hufflepuff. Sorry. 10 points for...
for all the houses. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, for all the houses.
So, yes. All right. Which leads us to one of the biggest ongoing questions, quite literally for years in the fandom, since Fourth Wing, of did Liam wield that ice at the Battle of Resen? And we're here to tell you, friends, he did.
He did.
The answers are resounding yes.
Yep.
And yep, so pretty much the quote is, she says, I once thought I saw Liam, dot, dot, dot. And Zayden cuts her off and says, wield ice? Yes.
Yes.
And that's it.
And that's it,
friends.
That's all we got.
Quite literally, that's all she wrote. That's it.
That's amazing.
It's fine.
We're moving past it because we have to. But also, we're never going to know what the original decision
I
was there.
I just don't love that Violet never said anything.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Throughout the entirety of Lost Book, she never at once was like, you know what's funny? Is that one battle I thought I saw Liam wield, and then nobody was like, don't speak.
Yeah.
Nope.
Nobody was like, wasn't there ice? No, I guess I was just so caught up, you know. But anyways, now we know.
Anyways.
Okay, so now we know. And really, it gives us a lot of peace in our heart that now we know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think the most interesting piece of this whole reveal is really the involvement of the dragons.
Yep.
And their decision to bond with the relic holders. So Zayden tells us, quote, our dragons came looking for us. They knew what they were doing. Violet interrupts and asks, like, if the dragons were giving them a better chance at survival. And he says, quote, more like building their own army. More signets equal more power.
I love that.
And this is so telling. It's so interesting. It gives us some insight into the Empyrean, which we are like craving to have knowledge about. So we're just like eating at any breadcrumb. But mm-hmm. we know the Empyrean is split on the Vinnit issue, right? And like keeping it a secret and not keeping it a secret.
Yeah.
Taryn mentions that in the previous book. So we're assuming that dragons who were sympathetic to the Tirish uprising, because also that's who their writers were.
Right.
Yeah.
Realistically, because it's bonding a descendant.
Yeah.
Made sure to bond the rebellion relic holders, like these kids.
Yeah.
Who were kids of their previous writers. Like yes. It is the generations. So I just love the idea of these dragons like biding their time, sitting in the Vale.
Yeah.
Knowing, hey guys, this is our year. They're coming up. They've come of age. Like,
right.
This is it. And on threshing day, they all are like, here we go. I'm going to go. And they just like find them and go specifically for them. And like, something about that. I
think there's way more reason to why dragons are bonding less and less.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Thinking that, Anna, yeah. I was just about to say
such a mind
that.
Meld lately,
oh my
Kim.
God, I was literally about to be like, guys, is that why Violet keeps talking about the fact that less dragons are bonding every year?
Because they're holding out.
They're waiting.
They're holding out for the offspring of the who hold rebellion relics. Like, they're like, nope, we're waiting.
Canon, we've solved it. You know, I'll hear nothing.
There's nothing else going on.
Nothing else. But I love that theory. And maybe it's not even that. Maybe they just want a more powerful army. But for me, it's like an emotional thing too. Like, I saw what happened in my writer's, you know, this line. And so like, I'm going to stick it to him. I've been waiting like
with 100%.
Trying to get revenge and like getting these kids the chance and getting them extra powers. And I love it. The fact that the dragons are involved, and it makes it less of a cop-out to me that just all the Mark Ones can have rebellion relics. It makes it interesting.
I agree, Christina. I liked this explanation of that it's the dragons that are driving it, so that it's not just this like convenient plot hole.
Agree.
She's like, well, the dragons are the ones doing it, so like, and the dragons choose their rider.
Exactly.
So what are they to do?
And if they are bonding with people who they were in their family previously, that also leads to second signets.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Is the rebellion relic giving them second signets, or is the fact that they bonded to a dragon from the family line giving them second signets?
Oh, I would think it was the relic, because only one generation has the rebellion relic.
Oh, yeah.
Right, but if those dragons are purposely bonding within their family line because...
Yeah.
Right, because that's what he says. The dragons are bonding with people with rebellion relics because it makes them stronger, and we get a second signet.
It gives them two signets.
Yeah.
And what he said is, like, everyone with a rebellion relic can have two signets. It depends on if the dragon comes to get them, pretty much, right? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah.
So it's almost like the rebellion like gives them the option of having a second signet.
Because if a dragon like Sigael bonded with him, like she was waiting for him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll circle back on that. Anyways, the only other thing to really mention about signets here is that we do get hints and clues of Zayden's signet strengthening. We assume from his venenism. Again, this is very hard to pin down and pinpoint since Zayden and the reader don't really know much about his intensiveness to begin with.
Right.
And we all spent majority of the book thinking every single morsel of a clue and hint about anything intensive was Violet's second signet, and we were wrong. So more on that in the next episode. But yeah, that is happening.
Yes.
Yep. Again, it's hard to pinpoint, but it is happening.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to the archives, Kim.
Okay, so we go to the archives and we meet Sassy Jessenia, which...
Love it.
Loved. We love to see it, Jessenia. She was giving sass.
Yeah.
I was here for it. She was putting Riddick and Sawyer in his place. It was fantastic. Sweet Sawyer is still trying to learn to sign. Bless his precious little heart. And they are just really, this relationship, it's not a relationship, it's nothing. But it's so sweet and so innocent and pure. And I just want to see more of it in the next book.
I
just want them to be together because they're precious babies, the both of them.
They are.
However... Sweetest Violet, finally, for so long, is finally like, oh my God. Okay, wait a minute. I need to go get my dad's research that has been in his home office this entire time.
Lord.
If we remember, Papa Sorengil was researching the Second Krovlet Uprising and Feather Tales. This was brought up in book one, you guys.
Yes.
It was brought up in Fourthwing and in Iron Flame. And she's like, I mean, I'm not going to think about it anymore. And it's like, But do
please think about it.
But
look
do
alive.
Please think about it. Yeah, look alive, Violet.
It's war times.
You know what it is? It's war times.
War times.
So she finally is like, yeah, I think we should go retrieve that information. Only issue is, of course, that Daddy Atos has now taken over for Lilith. He's running Biscayeth, so he is living in those quarters.
Yes.
But the biggest thing that we find out is Papa Sorengil's name. Guys,
yes.
He has a name. He is not just Papa Sorengil.
He has a name!
His name is Asher. His full title was Lieutenant Colonel Asher Sorengil. His last name was Daxton, but he took Lilith's name when they got married.
He did.
Which we love that. And now we all can't wait to go back and find all of the Colonel Daxtons that wrote some of the epigraphs in the first two books, because yes, that did happen.
There's three of them.
There's three of them. Yeah. Maybe we'll do like a little mini theories episode on Patreon or something, kind of breaking that down, because we suspected that Rebecca was going to do this, that she was going to put his last name in the previous books as like a little Easter egg.
I love it.
I thought it was really fun. Also, the way she sprinkled in, like, oh, no, it's Daxton.
Yes.
Oh, no, it's Sorengale. Like, it, like, went back. It kind of gave us an idea of the timeline and, like, the fact that, you know, there was more to the story than just him being Sorengale.
100%.
Yeah. That was such a great touch by Rebecca. And I was really impressed by that. The level of detail that she was plotting the epigraphs to slowly transition to Asher Sorengale.
Agreed.
And so then you could kind of tell, like, oh, this is when they got married.
Yeah.
And this is when he took her last name. So, Dane. Guys, Dane.
Guys, what a journey.
Wow.
What a journey.
Hello,
that we have
Dane.
Been on. Dane just stepped the fuck up in this book. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you can walk away from this book and not be like, yeah, I'm rooting for Dane, damn it.
Yeah.
There's no way you can walk away from this book and not be like, do I find Dane sexy and amazing? I surely do.
Dane, eyes on me, Atos.
Eyes on me. That
I
line, I was like, okay, Dane. Okay.
What the fuck is happening? What is happening right now?
We've upgraded from Trash Receptor.
He's so for a garbage trash horse.
It's actual sorcery that I think he's so sexy now. Like, it's actual sorcery on page.
Agreed.
Rebecca said he's the only one of the characters who has a headboard. Like, he's that put together.
That's right.
She was like, he's had a headboard since he was 17, guys. Okay? And he's got a matching duvet cover set.
But he has a headboard, though?
So he does have a headboard? So he does.
And then she goes, Riddick sleeps on a mattress on the floor.
1,000%.
Yep. Well, he's a frog. He's a leapfrog.
He's a frog freak.
He's a frog freak. He leaps around. Would I still be into it? Yeah. Yeah, I would. I don't care. It's on the ground.
100%. Leap into my bed.
Exactly. So Dane really shows up in a big way for Violet.
Yes.
He did in Iron Flame too. I have been on the Dane redemption train since Iron Flame, but I feel like in this moment, she's like, listen, I need you to go get the research from your dad's quarters. He's like, on it, say less, I will help you. Mm-hmm. And he does. So she gets the research. There is a password. Long story short, it is the name of Lilith's dragon, because there's like this whole thing about you never forget your first love, and they have to kind of decode it. Mm-hmm. And we find out that it's the name of Lilith's dragon, because every writer's first love is their dragon.
Mm-hmm.
So he writes her a letter at the beginning of the research, and this is part of what it says. Remember what I taught you about history. It is simply a collection of stories, each influenced by those that happened before and steering the ones to come. I wrote this study so it could be read by others but understood by you. If time is sweet, peruse at leisure. You'll find the connection between the uprising and the pursuit of Feathertales to be both alarming and enlightening. But if time has indeed run out and you seek the weapon to defeat those you've only learned about through lore, then abandon your robes and ride for Cordon.
Oh, fuck yeah. I love this.
I love it.
I love the sense of urgency of like,
yeah,
if that's happened, you abandon those robes.
Yeah. Like, path A is like peruse at leisure.
Yes.
Path B, abandon the robes, ride for Cordon.
Yeah.
Thank you, Papa.
Choose your own adventure, Papa Asher.
Exactly.
I loved it.
And that's where we're going.
And that's why Violet is so frustrated with them trying to run the quest for Indarna's kind, because they want to go to all these different islands and like pop back and report.
They want to go to the Emerald Sea.
We don't have time for that. So at the end of the letter, Papa Sorengale, I know his name is Asher, but I like Papa Sorengale.
Yeah.
He says, I'm so sorry this falls to you, my brightest light. Aww, trust only so Mira. Love, Dad.
Trust only Mira. Very interesting.
It's hard that like there are pieces I'm not liking about Papa Asher, like reveals, and then there's things I do love. Mm-hmm. It's like he's a complicated man. But also, trust only Mira, I think, is telling.
Very interesting.
Well, Brennan's dead.
In his mind, yes.
Yeah.
True.
Yes. So he thinks Brennan's dead.
I feel like there's something there with like the Mira's has a thing she has to do. Like they're together somehow. Like, I don't know.
Oh, I think Mira's important, which we get to with what Norrell says to her later.
Yes, but exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Also interesting. He's not like, trust your mom. Nope.
Right. Because Lilith's still alive as
just
well.
Just Mira.
Oh, I feel like Papa Sorengale was laying the groundwork. It's like very, I don't know, Star Warsy, Lord of the Ringsy, with like, everyone is dead now if you find this.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. So only Mira. Trust only Mira.
So he just already was like, Lilith and Brennan are going to be gone, but Mira will have made it.
Mira will have made it.
Okay. Well, Anna, will you take us to meet a Professor Sexy Zaddy?
Oh, I absolutely will.
Please.
Listen, the man of many names. Okay.
That's right. That's
Aiden
right.
Part two. Yep. In this book.
Exactly.
Theophany and
Professor Zaddy.
I loved this.
We have Professor Zaddy. Yes, please. Sign me up for his class. Yes. I will sit first row. I will be very attentive.
We will ace every quiz. We will be the best students. We will be the best girls.
A plus.
Tell me I'm good.
Would you say I'm doing a good job? The way that we all read that back blurb and we're like, but no way, he's actually like a teacher. Like, what, she'd make him like professor? And she was like,
yeah.
In fact, I did.
And we were like,
love it.
Thank you.
I love, okay, so he walks in and they're like, introducing Professor Zaden. And immediately everyone's like, oh, but Violet and Dane are like, oh, fuck, oh, man, damn the codex.
It. We're going to break up. Like, immediate thought. And everyone's
immediate.
Like,
immediate.
What's the problem?
I was just like, girl, you're leading a revolution. Like, I think we can break the codex, but right. whatever.
We're beyond the codex. I did love that Zayden was like, nope, that's not a thing.
That's not a thing. No, absolutely not.
Her and Dane are like, damn it. He's like, oh, bad luck, Violet. And she's like,
yeah. She's like, well, drat. He's like, what are you talking about? It's a book. It's a book of rules. Like, no, just fuck the book.
But you know who doesn't think it's just a book? Daddy Atos. And he has literally spies following them around the school to make sure that they don't touch or look at each other.
Yep.
Ugh. Okay, so Zayden is in charge of sparring class because we quickly realize that we can't just fight Ven in hand-to-hand combat on the ground because, they can suck the life from the ground and therefore kill you.
Yeah. Oops.
So we have to be able to use our signets. And so now we have transitioned from like our challenges just being physical strength to actually learning how to challenge each other and fight with our signets, which seems like that should have been happening already, but whatever. Yeah. Nobody asked me for my curriculum, so.
This is why Carr, I think, is evil.
Oh.
Why would he not help them train their signets?
Right.
There's a lot of evil professors, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're working. I think there's a little foreshadowing here. One of the big takeaways is that we get to see Rye and Violet and their little squad realize that we can't just fight somebody with a signet by ourselves. We have to work as a team. That's when we're strongest, which really foreshadows what happens at the end of the book, right? We're learning how to stay in our lane, trust our squad mates to handle what they need to handle, which is really important at the end of the book. The other big takeaway from one of the classes is Zayden and Violet sparring, okay? And he's like, you gotta let go. And she's like, I'm gonna hurt you. And he's like, no, you won't. And I'm like, well, she might, but okay.
Well, okay. It's fine.
He can handle it. He can handle it.
Yeah, he can handle it. So they're battling and he's like, I have to teach you. You have to be able to find me. And she's like, what the hell do you mean? And he's like, well, my shadows, apparently there are different threads of shadows. And he's like, the truest of my threads you'll be able to find. And she's like, but why do I need to find you?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, because you're the only one capable of killing me. And I think it's like, this is his whole battle, the whole book, is if I lose control, somebody has to be able to stop me.
Mm-hmm.
It's you, Garrick, or Bodhi, and you're the only one who can actually kill me with lightning.
Right. What's Garrick going to like blow his wind at me? It's not going to do much.
Bodhi's apparently only has one signet that we know of, and it's countering signets. And
yeah, okay.
Doesn't seem to work on Benin, so that's real unfortunate. Yeah,
so basically useless. Cool.
Useless, which brings us to the final episode later. Okay, the most important thing, though, that came out of the sparring class, and I just need to take a moment of silence for Christina here.
Yeah.
Halden shows up.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
And Christina fucking called it.
She called it.
Called
Can
it.
We all, let's take a moment for Christina. Claps for Christina, everybody. Clap for Christina.
Clap, clap, clap.
I mean.
Thank you. I never die on hills the way I died on this hill. And I am alive.
You were alive and well on that
hill. Thank you very much.
You planted that flag and you said, I'm not moving.
That's right.
And I said, this is where I live now. I also want to thank all the patrons who watched me talk this theory through for 30 minutes by myself on Patreon. Just literally by myself for 30-minute video.
Yeah.
But by the end, I was like, I think that's it, guys. Okay, here's what it is.
Yeah.
It is that Halden's her ex-love. She broke up because he was a prince. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I love it. And you were right. The eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, loyal best friend here. Christina posted a reel about this, and some people were like, oh, that's stupid. That's not right. You're wrong. You're wrong. Well, who's wrong now? You. Because Christina was right.
Well,
and the eyes were true. So
I'm not going to say I told you so.
I will.
But I did tell
she
you so.
She told you
but
so.
My best friend will. And she'll tell
But she told you so.
She told you so. Okay? So let that be a lesson.
I love it.
Wow, thank you guys. This is the best.
Sorry, I'll calm down.
So yes, Halden is there though.
Oh yeah, he is.
Yes, Halden is there. We find out that they were officially dating and Violet caught him and his professor having sexy times.
Uh-oh.
And she said, nope, shut the door, walked out, never said anything else to him again. And I love that. I love that we ghosted him.
Agreed.
I love that energy.
I love
and
it.
And so then Halden's all like, okay, but like, let me take you to dinner and let me apologize. And she was like, bitch, that was 3 years ago. We've moved on. I think you need to move on too.
Hi, do you see who I'm with?
You're the worst.
Do you see him? That body?
That body, though?
Please.
You wish you could be an iota of this man.
Exactly.
Also, like, Halden, we knew Halden was going to suck. We knew he was going to be, like, a little princeling, and he also delivered on that.
Oh, yeah.
He did. Okay. So the important thing, though, that Halden does bring with him is a letter from Takara saying that King Cortland of Deverelli will meet with them if he has brought an Amelian Citrine Jewel, okay? The Amelian Citrine Jewel is a lesser magic amplifier worn by one of the members of the First Drift. Okay. Mm. So actually, the first time this is mentioned is in Fourth Wing when Violet is crossing the parapet and she's doing like her little nervous tick scripting where she's like citing facts.
Yeah.
And she talks about a jewel and it having powers and being able to like hold minor magics.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Don't know if that's going to be important later, but I think it might be. So we have to go get this Citrine Jewel. It's outside of the wards. It's in kind of like a destroyed city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course it is.
Of course it is because that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
But guys, Zayden.
Oh.
Everybody has been wanting jealous Venon Zaddy, and we fucking got him. And it was delicious.
Oh, yeah, it was so hot.
Mm.
This is what we've all wanted, and she also delivered.
She did.
It was exactly what we wanted. The jealousy. So hot.
So he overhears the conversation and Halden asking her out in the Signet sparring class, and he like, accidentally his shadows knock Halden back.
Yeah,
so good.
So then he shows up to Violet's dorm room, and he like is there, and he's like, he's upset.
He's mad.
He's like huffing and puffing like he ran there, and she's like, dude, what are you doing here? Like, we're getting to get in trouble by Daddy Atos.
Mm.
And he's like, did you love him? And it's emphasized by like periods. Did you love him?
Love him.
And she's just like, what are you talking about? And she's like, oh my God, are you jealous? And he says, yes, love. I'm jealous. He splays his hand over the small of my back and tugs me toward him. I'm jealous of the armor that holds you when I can't, the sheets on your bed that caress your skin every night, and the blades that feel your hands. So when the prince of our realm walks into my classroom and starts talking to the woman I love with what can only be considered intense familiarity, and then has the audacity to ask her out right in front of me, naturally, I'm going to get jealous.
Yeah, you are.
And I was like, tell me more.
Say more things. How you're jealous.
The way that I am a feral puddle every time he uses the term love to her.
Girl,
I don't understand.
It's so hot.
It's so hot.
Especially at one point he goes, fuck love.
Yes.
Oh God. Oh God.
Fuck love. I was like,
oh, that's doing some
boosting. Oh my God.
I'm going to be straight up honest with you.
Oh my God.
I'm into it.
Did I just black this out? Did he call her love in the first two books, or did we just start this book?
I don't think he did.
No. And actually, it's very contentious. A lot of people don't like it, apparently.
Oh, God.
They're like, she's violence. I'm like, okay, yeah, but love.
But love.
Yes, love.
Yes, love.
Listen, the god of love, goddess of love.
Oh, we solved it. That's it.
Okay, so he's like jealous, Zaddy, and he's like, did you love him? And she says, well, I don't know. We were like 18. I don't know. I think I loved him, but it's nothing compared to what I
feel for you. I was a dumb dumb.
It's so sweet. He's like, knowing he's been here, and he taps a space where her heart is, and that's what breaks him.
This sweet boy.
She like holds him, and she's basically like, no one could ever hold the space that you do in my heart. I love you unconditionally. It's the sweetest moment between them, and I just love it so much.
It's better than we even dreamed.
Yeah,
we were like, oh, we want him to be jealous and like throw him back with shadows, and then he gives us this.
Yeah. And it's vulnerable.
Oh, it's so good.
Vulnerable. It's jealous, hot, possessive, you know, but in a good way. And then he's vulnerable about it.
Oh my God. I love
They're
it.
They're so toxic.
Much.
I love them.
I love it.
Chef's kiss.
Love it.
Okay.
Also, Violet makes a note that when Zayden is talking about Halden, he says, I saw his thoughts, basically insinuating that he didn't just read his intentions, but he read what was in his mind.
Yeah.
And this happens a couple times throughout the book. And Violet goes, wait, that's not how you're Signet. And then, of course, Zayden cuts her off.
Yeah, exactly. Like what I was saying, it does happen. There are clues to it. But also, like, we don't really learn more about it.
No.
Yeah.
Because we still don't even know much about his intensiveness to begin with. So it's hard to say what is normal, his normal intensiveness, and what is strengthening.
Yes. The only person who knows he's an intensic is Violet. So the only person he's truly able to use his, like, full extent of it on is around her.
Yeah.
Mm. So, like, who's to say that he's not learning more about it as they're together, if he's able to, like, strengthen it?
I'm sure he is. Yeah.
Also, the Venom aspect could do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So really quickly, we go to Anka with the original quest squad. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to shit because nobody listened to Violet. And she was like, we can't, you know, like Papa Sorengel says, we need to go to war with people that we trust implicitly. And she doesn't trust anybody there except Zayden.
Mm-hmm.
Aura's a mess. She kills Grady because she freaking hears a stone fall and it scares her. And she's like, boom, fire.
God, what a little bitch.
Fire.
Wyvern kills Aura, which nobody is sad about. Sorry, Aura.
Fine.
Bye.
The biggest takeaway from this failure of a trip is what Papa Sorengel wrote, and that you have to trust people implicitly when you go to war.
Yep.
Which brings us to one of our favorite scenes.
Oh, Christina, I'm so excited.
Guys, the way we will not shut up about how much we love Riddick in this book.
Never.
The way the entire fandom will not shut up about how he is the MVP of this book. He is such a joy.
Yes.
He is such a treat. And the character growth that we see from him in this book is just outstanding. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
This is a quote that exemplifies it. So Riddick says, quote, I just need to go. He looks away and grips the orange with both hands. One of us needs to go with you. Ever since, pain flashes through his dark brown eyes as he brings his gaze back to mine. Ever since, Athbean, one of us has been by your side, except the time you snuck out on your little siblings only trip to Cordon. The school splits and we go with you. Beskayet falls under attack and we're there. Heading into Por Amiel for Meryn's brothers, it's us. We get separated and you either get dragged into an interrogation chamber and tortured for days or nearly roasted by Aura's fire. And I know I can't be the only one who thought it. If Liam had been there, keeping watch over you, it never would have happened.
Mm.
I just think bad things happen when we aren't together. Ree can't go. She has an entire squad to lead, and Sawyer's still recovering, which leaves me. And if Ryerson had been 100% sure of his ability to keep bad things from happening, he wouldn't have assigned Liam to our squad in the first place. The guy's powerful, but he's not infallible. Sawyer says, and you are.
I love this.
And Riddick says, I'm just as good of a fighter as any of you. And while you've been focused on rehab and Rhiannon is chasing first years to keep them in line, I've been the one reading every fucking book Jasenya shoves at me and spending extra hours training. It really pisses me off when you guys act like my sense of humor somehow lessens my ability to show up for our squad.
Oh,
fucking
snaps for Riddick.
Thank you, Riddick.
Oh my God.
Incredible. And what I love so much about this scene and the way he says this is he's not just saying like, I want to be there. He's proving why he should be. He's proving why he is the one who should be there.
Yes.
And he recognizes that his humor makes people overlook his skills, but then he's pushing back on it. Mm-hmm. It's not just him like volunteering. It's him being like, I'm demanding to be here and this is why I deserve it. Like, this is why it needs to happen. You know?
Yep. Yes. He's equally as capable as everybody else. And he listed the reasons why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you said, we're trusting each other and you guys have to trust me to do my job. Mm-hmm. I'm funny. I'm fucking hilarious. And I'm really sexy.
Yeah. It's a total package.
But like, I'm also a really fucking good fighter.
Yeah.
But I'm also really good.
I fuck like a third year.
Yeah, he does.
And he fucks like a third year, guys. I just love that he is our comedic relief. We also are guilty of this, you know? So it's like in this moment, he's making them and the readers reassess him as a character.
For sure.
He's also for us being like, right, this is my role in the story going forward. Like, I'm not just the funny one.
100%.
Yes. I love that he said that.
It's so good.
Yes.
Oh. Also, he can do cool things with the oranges. His signet's special. He's going to be special. No one's able to like actually take the water out to like freeze the water out of the orange. So he's a special boy as well.
Telling you that's important.
It's giving maybe one of the six.
It's definitely important at the end of the book.
Agreed.
It absolutely is. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's go to...
Oh, Kim,
yes.
Please.
Okay, guys. Violet gives a fuck the patriarchy speech. Keychain on the ground. We were always skipping town.
Love it.
I loved this so much. She finally gets to kind of snap back at Markham, who, if we remember, is the head of the scribes. Violet was his protege. He was her mentor. Violet was going to be the, you know, the head of the scribes. He was training her and she went away and now he's pissed about it. And she really hasn't spoken to him since it all came out that Markham knew about the scribes. And I think, especially for Violet, this is such a betrayal because she's the heart of a scribe. And scribes, their whole being is focused on truth and knowledge and finding that knowledge
and
disseminating information to everybody and getting all sides of the story and knowing that her mentor, the person she looked up to more than almost anybody, maybe other than her father, knew about the Venon, kept it from people, and therefore betrayed his own people by keeping that knowledge a secret, I think is the ultimate betrayal to Violet. And she cannot get over it.
She can't.
I don't blame her.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. So after the failed mission, she goes back to the scenarium and she's like, okay, we're going to do this shit my way because this was a failure and now we're going to do it my way or it's going to be the highway. And Markham's and everyone's like, meh, meh, meh. And she goes, you don't speak, I snap, meeting his gaze for the first time in months. Not to me. As far as I'm concerned, you have the credibility of a drunkard and the integrity of a rat. You dare complain about missing 6 years of information on Erasia when you've hidden centuries of our continent's history from public knowledge?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Violet. Thank you, Violet. And he says, you cannot speak to a superior officer, let alone the commander of a quadrant with such disrespect.
What?
And she says, in case you missed it, when I crossed the parapet, I am not in your chain of command. Then fucking Daddy Atos is like, but you aren't mine. And I speak with the authority of Melgrin. Shut up. And she says, and I speak with the authority of Terran and Darna and the Empyrean. Or did you forget that two dragons also lost their riders?
Fuck yeah.
Violet is a boss ass bitch and I love it.
Love this.
Great. I loved every bit of this.
I'm turned on. I'm like, God damn, Violet.
Damn it, Violet. Yes. Ooh,
that was good.
I love to see her stepping into her confidence and her power. Mm-hmm. She seems so much more confident in herself when she stands up to Aura Benhaven and she's going to be like, no, you come for Dane. Like, you're going to fight with me if we're going to do wielding. Like, fuck that. She's standing up to Markham. Like, I love this Violet.
Agreed.
I just love to see it.
Agreed.
So we have that whole shebang and Haldin's being a little fuckboy because of course he is.
Yeah.
And he's whining, but he's like, fine, you can pick your squad, whatever.
Lean.
Fine.
And sweet as Riddick, he's like in kind of standing like in the meeting or whatever. And Violet goes up to him and she's like, oh my God, I'm so proud of you. Like, there was no outburst. And he was like, I kept my inside thoughts inside.
I love it so much. It's like right after his beautiful speech.
It's so
and
good.
And this is why he's so brilliant. Like, this is why he's such a fun character.
Agreed.
Yes.
Agreed.
Oh, I love it.
So good.
Okay, so the quest squad goes to Devarelli. Mm-hmm. We have Haldin going with us because King Cortlyn of Devarelli will only meet with a member of the nobility family.
Yeah.
And he's bringing the jewel to hopefully get Cortland's agreement to become allies with them in this upcoming war against the Venon. Mm-hmm. Vi is on like a separate little side mission that nobody knows about. I mean, except for Zayden. Riddick and Mira, that they're all going to go look for Papa Sorengil's, the books that he left, right, in Deverelli. Mm-hmm. So they stop at Corden, they stop there with Dakaris, and then they are going to go on to Deverelli. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about this for a second. They cross over, right? They leave the wards. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then they cross over into this area where the Isle Kingdoms are, and that's where magic is supposedly, like, it disappears. There's no magic. Okay?
Right.
Nobody is able to communicate with their dragons except Taryn and Darna and Violet. Their group chat is alive and well, okay? Mm-hmm. Their dragons are all supposedly feeling uncomfortable with the loss of magic. Zayden even says that Segaela is in pain because she doesn't have the magic. Taryn makes a note, though, that Andarna seems totally fine, okay? And who is the only group chat that's alive and well? Andarna's group chat.
Exactly.
Wow.
There's something very special. And we know that the seventh breed lives somewhere in this area of the Isles, right? And mm-hmm. somewhere outside of the magic realm, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
They don't seem to be struggling.
Nope.
And Darna doesn't seem to be struggling.
Right.
Which makes me think that the way that she is channeling is different.
Agreed.
However she is channeling.
Okay.
So which brings me to this. The sky versus the source, like being the ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is what Venon derived their magic from, okay? When Violet is flying to Anka to get the citrine jewel, she leaves the wards, okay? She goes, it's like barren, the Venon have destroyed the land. She says, and I am struck with the oddest urge to try and pluck strands from the very sky and weave runes. Which is very interesting because that's not how you weave runes. You channel your magic from your dragon and that is how you weave the runes, okay? Mm-hmm. And she says she wants to pluck them from the sky.
Yeah.
Also, she sucks at weaving runes.
Yeah, she hates it.
Yeah. The fact that that seems to be like her first instinct.
That's weird.
It's strange. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Then also, Mira, when they cross over into the Isle Kingdoms, mm-hmm. she hands out these little runed discs. Mm-hmm. She gives one to Violet, and it's an amethyst disc with a sun protection rune. And Mira mm-hmm. says, basically, she's doing a little science experiment. We're trying to see if runes can exist and work outside of magic, uh-huh. if they work independently of magic. Mm. So she's like, well, you just hold this and see if you, like, protects you from getting sunburned. Didn't think anything of it at the moment. It's brought up again later, at least one more time, if not two more times. And what Violet says is that she wasn't getting sunburned, that Mira's was working, or if it wasn't Mira's, it was the same rune on the dagger that Zayden gave her during her first year. So she's been walking around with a rune on her dagger for a year that is protecting her from the sun.
Oh,
what? Yeah.
Can she potentially channel from the sky?
From the sky.
Yeah. Using Andarna. But the thing that is inhibiting her
yes.
is this freaking dagger with a rune protecting yes. her from the sky, the sun.
From the sky.
Which is her ultimate power. Wow. She could command, what does the Venon say to her at the end of book one? You could command the sky to surrender all its power.
Yeah.
Why would Zayden put that on there? Why was that on the dagger?
I don't know. She's fair skinned. I don't know. He didn't want her to get sunburned.
She's a delicate flower.
She's a delicate flower.
Oh my God, Zayden. Okay, yeah, wow.
Isn't that
wow,
interesting?
Anna. I love that. I think that's
this
it.
This is fascinating.
Like, why are we bringing this up? Why is the group chat working? Violet channels fucking lightning. Whether or not she wants to act ignorant about the fact that she did or didn't, she channels lightning.
1,000,000,000%.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow, I love that. And that makes so much sense.
Agreed.
Okay, so anyways, we're over there. It's like Golden Retriever Zayden. He's so happy. He's at peace.
Oh,
there's no magic. He doesn't feel the pull to, like,
channel, yeah.
you know, use to channel. And it's just, he's happy. And he's like, they're riding on horsebacks and oh. he's making jokes. It's so cute.
Guys, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. It's a love it. We love to see it. Mm-hmm. So they end up at the bookstore where Narelle is, okay? Mm-hmm. That's where the woman, the old woman that they're supposed to go meet. She takes one look at Zayden and it's clear that, like, Zayden and Violet are a couple.
Yeah.
And Papa Sorengil must have been talking about Dane Atos to her a lot in the past. Yeah, and she goes, well, he described you almost perfectly, Dane Atos. The way, the way that line made me lose it.
Oh my God.
Cackling.
Hysterical.
Cackling.
And what really made me lose it was Mira losing it. Like, Mira loses it.
Yeah. She was like, I can't. I actually can't.
She said, I can't. I literally can't.
I gotta go.
I'm obsessed.
And Dane
with it.
Is like, this is awkward. You hate me again. Like, we were just having a good time.
You ruined it, Narelle.
Back to square one.
Okay, so we're there. They get the stack of books.
Yeah.
I think this is interesting to note. The epigraph that is kind of right before this, it's from Lilith Sorengil, which we speculated these unsent correspondences are recovered, I think are actually her writing to her deceased husband as, like, a form of therapy, like talking to him about her
agreed.
Kids.
Yes.
Okay.
Because they're unsent, they're recovered. So she says, she won't understand why you've kept her in the dark. You left too soon, left too many of your plans unfinished. Now we can only hope the bond between our daughters is strong enough to endure the past they've chosen, they'll need each other to survive. So this is after her husband's dead. This is after Brennan is dead. Mm-hmm. It's just her two daughters to rely on. And I think she's referencing Mira. She won't understand why you kept her in the dark. You left too soon. Now we can only hope the bond between our two daughters is strong enough. And we see this. Mira's upset. Mira feels like she's in the dark. Norell even says to her later, we all have a part to play in what's coming to us. Because Mira's like, oh yeah, am I allowed to touch the books? Like they weren't left to me.
Yeah.
And Norell looks at her and she says, we all have a part to play in what's coming for us. This one is simply hers, like meaning Violet. While he was busy raising Violet for this particular mission, your mother was raising you. I wonder what legacy you've inherited.
And this is what I was talking about earlier. I was like, where he says, only trust Mira. Like, I feel like there's some sort of prophecy or something set up. They were set in motion for the two of them, whatever their paths are, to like be ultimately help each other, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought she was talking about him keeping Violet in the dark about like the venom and
that's what I thought too first.
All the like her being touched by Dune and all that jazz.
Yeah.
That's true. I think that can be equally true too. But I think there's a level of Mira that's jealous.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, totally.
For sure. Yeah.
But also the thing of you left too many of your plans unfinished is really interesting to me. Like, what plans were unfinished?
Yeah,
listen,
agreed.
Papa Sorengil, like, I'm sorry, but I don't know. I'm a little upset with you, sir.
Yeah.
There was too many,
agreed.
Too many things that we've laid around the planet.
Yeah, for sure. With no answers.
Agreed.
And she's a child.
Yeah.
Agreed.
It's giving Dumbledore.
It's giving Dumbledore.
It is. All right, what's next?
So really quickly, we get back, guys. It's sexy time. It's Zayden. He says, I'm done being polite. And y'all, there is no magic to hold him back.
That's right.
It is so fucking sexy.
It's so good.
It's so playful. It's so fun. They break a table because what is a sexy time with Violet and Zayden if they don't break a table?
Absolutely. It's standard.
Furniture be warned.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's so hot. And then knock, knock, knock on the door. They get interrupted. Zayden's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
He just yells, yes, the table is broken. Now what do you need? He opens the door a little bit and it's Riddick. And he's like, you two totally broke it, didn't you? And Riddick asked on the edge of laughter. He's like that armoire no one was supposed to notice getting hauled out of her room during first year. And Mira like whips her head. The what?
What?
Obsessed. That was my favorite part where she was like, I'm sorry. What
I'm
now?
Sorry. My little baby sister is breaking furniture having sex.
What?
Like, I'm sorry.
Not even just like a chair. An armoire.
An armoire. Guys.
Like a huge piece of furniture.
It's so good.
I love it. So basically Riddick's like, cool. So you're done breaking tables. Holden's been captured. And Satan's like, I'm sorry. That's not my problem.
Yeah. Sucks for him.
We'll be going back to sexy time. Bye.
Yeah, but basically they're like, you're the next only nobility here, the Duke of Tirindor, right. So you need to go and get him back. And he's like, great, Violet, let's go.
Yeah.
Which brings us to Christina.
So they do go, guys, and pretty much they go through a rigmarole. They end up going into this dinner party from absolute hell.
Yep.
There is some interesting foreshadowing where he's like, oh yeah, she's my consort. And Violet's like, what, we didn't discuss this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, well, no, we need to. And when would be a good time to discuss it? And she's like, when we're not risking death. And he's like, well, that's never. So
when we might not die.
We'll table it. We'll talk about it later.
Love it.
But it really is interesting foreshadowing, the perfect example of him being like, no, we're long term.
Yep.
You're my equal. I want everyone to see you as my equal. We're together forever. Okay. This is where my mind is.
Oh, they are.
And it's so sweet. All right. So we get to the dinner party. This was absolutely wild.
Oh God.
King Cortlandt is absolutely a bananas character. It's like he's this almost like eccentric millionaire, but has no checks and balances.
Yes.
He's this like wild guy. It's so wild. I feel like Rebecca had fun writing him because it was so crazy to read. So he just doesn't give a fuck about anything. And turns out they're kind of like the Fae. Like, you don't make a deal with the people of Devarelli if you can't follow through. If they broker a deal, they're probably trying to scheme you out of something. And if you break it, they're going to kill you.
Yep.
So pretty much that does happen. We pretty much, for lack of a better term, Game of Thrones, Halden's guard. So Halden's guard, who loves him, turns out her head's on the platter. Guys, her head's on the platter.
Y'all was not prepared.
Oh, God.
Rebecca took it. She went Broadbent levels here. Okay? If you know, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's because basically Halden stole stuff from the king. He was trying to steal stuff from Cortlandt because he's entitled and a little bitch.
Oh, God. So fucking stupid.
Hence the beheading, which leads us to King Cortlandt, again, eccentric Looney Tune.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, pause everyone. My little ones have arrived. Turns out his little ones are huge, white, scary panthers.
Yeah.
And they just like traipse on in. And at first I was like, oh, it's kind of like he has like a zoo. Like, okay, there's cats.
It's his menagerie.
Yeah.
Nope, they're scary. They're scary. They're bad. They're bad cats. Yeah, they're bad cats.
Bad kitties.
Like, so then quickly chaos just ensues. And Cortlandt is like, kill them all. I grow tedious and tired of this. Please kill them all except for Takars. And so the guards and the cats are like attacking them, and it's all very scary.
Yeah.
And pretty much Violet's in a very bad position. She's about to die.
Yeah.
And so Zayden is like, what am I to do? I must channel.
Yeah.
So he does. And it's not great, but I do love that he then is like, he's so sexy. And he's like, they hurt you. And she's like, I know, but this is
such bad timing.
But he uses her conduit to channel.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
Which I don't know if that's important or not, if it's supposed to work outside the war. But it does.
Oh.
Or not the wards. In the land of no magic.
In the land of no magic. He uses the alloy from her conduit to channel.
Yeah.
So that is interesting.
Either way. Yeah, not good.
Not good. No bueno. So Violet then jumps into crisis mode and she's like, okay, I love you. You got to trust me. Just sit down and put your head in your hands and do not move till I tell you.
Yeah.
I got to single-handedly save this entire operation. I will get back to you.
Because everyone around me is just fucking up left and right.
Who runs the world?
Girls.
Violet.
Violet.
Girls. Okay, so then she's pretty much like, go, I'll see you in a week at Best Guy. If no one can see your eyeballs, like, leave.
Yeah.
But sneaky, sneaky Vi is like, okay, come on in. This is my little one. And it's Andarna with his kitty cat dangling in her mouth.
I love
it. Like, not eating her, but also...
She's being so gentle.
Yeah. She's like, Andarna, be gentle.
No teeth marks. And then King Cortland's like, Shira, no! It's so good. Okay, so then pretty much Violet uses this threat to his cat. And also the shell from Andarna's egg is like a trade to smooth things over.
Yes.
He agrees. He pardons Zayden. It's all fine. But we do want to note something here regarding Andarna's eggshell.
Yes. Okay,
so this is the quote. Violet thinks, quote, I run my finger along the inner edge, picturing her biding her tongue for hundreds of years, listening, waiting. A charge of energy runs up my arm and I lift my brows at the sensation.
It's very interesting.
What do you mean?
What does that mean?
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Why is there power? I mean, is it just because it's like a special egg or is it because it's Andarna's egg?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Do empty eggshells have power?
They do because they're used to make alloy. They're one of the things that's used. They can hold magic for a while, apparently.
Got it. Okay.
But it's something about, I think, them physically being here, too, because she feels this, like, energy. Is it because Andarna, again, Andarna can do all her magical thing? Like, there's still magic here for
her. Right, right,
right. Her conduit before Zayden sucks the life out of it is warm to her touch, which she notes. She goes, oh, that's odd. Hmm. I was like, why?
Violet, come on.
Violet. Say more things. Follow up on things.
Oh, God. All right, Kim, take us back to Beskyeth.
Okay, so we get back to Beskyeth. Violet, no thanks to Halden, being a complete and total fuck up, successfully negotiated an alliance with the Isle Kingdoms, and she is now prepping the quest squad for their big trip. Only, like, bummer, as Christina noted, is that Zayden's golden flecks in his eyes are now amber after the little slip in Devarelli. They have not gone back to golden. They are staying amber, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But had to be done. You know, war times. So I would love to introduce you to the official quest squad, okay? It is Violet, Zayden, Dane, Riddick, Garrick, Mira, Kat, Traeger, Marin, and Drake. And, surprise, Auric is coming.
Yay.
Auric rocks up and he's like, well, Halden, you're a baby back bitch and you can't control your emotions. And there needs to be a royal to go meet with all these kings and queens who will only meet with a royal, you know, ambassador. And it can't be you because you have the emotions of a toddler. So I'm going to go. And Halden's like, okay.
Okay.
I loved this. I especially love that Halden didn't know where Auric was. In Halden's mind, he thinks that he's disappeared.
Yeah. Yes. He's like, Daddy's been worried. Daddy's had the whole country. He's like, I don't know who he's been using to search, but I've been right here.
I've literally been here this whole time.
No one's come a-looking.
No.
Also, he's like, I haven't missed you. So goodbye, farewell.
Goodbye.
Exactly.
It's so good. I love that moment.
Yeah. So that's kind of the end of this. Halden does look at Violet and he's like, Violet, like stressing out about Auric being safe. And Violet says, I won't let anything happen to him. Halden nods once. I'll hold you to it. He looks at each of us in turn and the promise morphs into a threat. All of you. That's
very interesting. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like he does care about his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Layers. He's an onion.
Layers. We love an onion.
He's a stupid onion.
He's a stupid onion nonetheless. But he's an onion nonetheless. So that is where we are going to end part one. The quest squad has been assembled, but we have not gone on our, you know, trip of the Isles. We'll save that for part two. But I think that's it, guys.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticism to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.